Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Out front next, Putin blocking the U.S., refusing to allow nuclear inspectors into the country as Putin grows more desperate, lacking the manpower to replace his dying fighters. Plus, Trump deposed. New video tonight of the former president under oath, pleading the Fifth more than 400 times. And Ron DeSantis fights back against Trump's attacks as one major advantage is emerging for DeSantis over Trump. We're going to show you one number that really matters. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, nuclear breakdown. Russia tonight breaking the nuclear arms control treaty with the United States. For the first time since the signing of the transformational New START treaty, Russia is refusing to allow the U.S. to inspect its nuclear weapons. Now, this move comes at a moment where the world faces the highest risk of nuclear conflict since the Cold War. And it is happening as Putin and his military leaders have threatened nuclear war.
With regard to the threat of a nuclear war, Svetlana Gennadyevna, you are right. The threat is growing, so why hide the truth?
We don't have the resources to defeat the NATO bloc with conventional means, but we have nuclear weapons for that.
There's more where that came from. I mean, even 2 weeks ago, Putin's top ally and Russia's former president, Dmitry Medvedev, warned, quote, the loss of a nuclear power in a conventional war can provoke the outbreak of a nuclear war. Putin's breaking the most significant arms treaty in modern history comes as his back is up against the wall. I want you to just listen to this from Russian state media. This is a well-known and highly respected Russian analyst.
By the start of the mobilization, our airborne forces lost 40 to 50% of the staff.
40 to 50%, just coming out and saying that, gone, dead. And Western officials today warn that Putin does not have the manpower to replace all of them or the more than 100,000 Russians who are estimated to have already died on the battlefield. And Putin's reliance on the Wagner Group to fight is also now running, it appears, up against its own manpower issues. They're now apparently looking for prisoners from Ukrainian prisons. So these are Ukrainians who have been spending months in prison in a war zone, now being recruited to come out and kill Ukrainians for Wagner Group. The mayor of Melitopol today saying that Wagner fighters are being sent to Melitopol to look for future Wagnerites among their prisoners. Now, the Wagner Group is trying to turn this weakness into a way to mock the United States, saying that it welcomes American fighters, too. The group has a press unit, and in a statement to CNN, they wrote this. We would like to inform you that if American citizens wish to join the Wagner Group, they can then send their appeal to the Wagner Press Service. We will definitely look into it. All right, in a moment, you're going to hear more from the front lines about the state of Putin's Wagner Group, which is so crucial to all of this, including why the Ukrainians say Wagner's fighters often seem like they're on drugs. We begin tonight with Fred Plykin on the ground in Ukraine, near where some of the worst fighting has been raging in Bakhmut. And Fred, I know you've had a chance to be there on the front line. You've spoken to Ukrainian troops who are fighting the brutal Wagner soldiers. What are they telling you?
Hi, Erin. Well, they tell us that the going there is extremely tough, and it's extremely difficult for them to hold the line precisely because of what you were just saying, because the Wagner group has such a high rate of attrition. They saw so many bodies at these frontline trenches that the Ukrainians are in. That's really difficult to defend these trenches, and just when the Ukrainians think they're done, the next wave of Wagner fighters come. Now, of course, the attrition rate among those Wagner fighters is extremely high. Many of them get killed, but as we know, for Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of Wagner, all of these people are expendable. Now, we did manage to speak to some Ukrainian troops who fight Wagner virtually every day, who witness this every day, and here's what they told us.
Going underground with Ukraine's frontline defenders against Russia's brutal private military company, the Wagner Group. Andrei and Borisich say they battle Wagner stormtroopers nearly every day. This is what it was like when a handful of their troops were attacked by about 200 Wagner fighters.
We were fighting for about 10 hours in a row, and it wasn't like just waves. It was uninterruptedly, so it was just like they didn't stop coming.
Andrei says his men took out scores of Wagner soldiers until they themselves had to retreat.
140 of them, 80 were wounded and 60 were killed. And my platoon was 13 people plus several from infantry. It was about 20 soldiers from our side and let's say 200 from their side.
Wagner's tactics, he says, they try to overwhelm the Ukrainians by sending waves of fighters, many of them convicts recruited straight out of jail.
They make the group, let's say from 10 soldiers, is passing 30 meters. Then they started digging in and keeping the position. Then next group is coming next 30 meters. They reach their position and going next 30 meters, also digging in. Hmm. And that's how, step by step, they're trying to move forward.
The Ukrainians say Wagner fighters often seem drugged.
The machine gunner was almost getting crazy because he was shooting at them. And he said, I know I shot him, but he doesn't fall. And then after some time, when he maybe bleeded out already, so he just only falls down. It looks like it's very, very likely that they are getting some drugs before attack.
The unit provided us with a recording they say is of Andrei questioning a captured Wagner fighter.
И как ты понял, что ты мясо?
Да вот, первое же задание. 28 декабря же нас только привезли на передок.
Ага.
И вот прошедшей ночью нас отправили.
Сколько человек было в группе?
10.
We reached out to Wagner's boss, Yevgeny Prigozhin, about allegations of abuse in their ranks. This was his answer on Wagner's social media account. Dear CNN, he writes, do you really think that we will discuss our military issues with you while you are an open enemy? It's the same as discussing military matters and sharing information with the CIA. Andrei says no matter how many more fighters Prigozhin throws at them, they will resist.
This is the war for freedom. It's a war for democracy, yes. It's not even for me, it's not even the war between Ukraine and Russia. But this is a war between a regime and democracy.
So some pretty strong words there, Aaron. And certainly one of the things that we did get from those soldiers is that their morale is still pretty high. And they say that they themselves are pretty surprised at how well they are actually still be able to hold the line, despite the fact that the Russians are throwing so many bodies at all of this. And right now for them, it's getting even more difficult because, of course, we know that Yevgeny Prigozhin, the Ukrainians say, really wants to give Vladimir Putin a win there in Bakhmut. However, the Russian military also wants to give Vladimir Putin a win. That's why there's many Russian regular military units out there as well right now. So the Ukrainians really fighting two very, very strong forces in that area and trying to hold on, Aaron.
Fred Plykin, thank you so much. And incredible reporting there, hearing that soldier. I want to go now to Christo Grozev, the executive director and lead Russia investigator for Bellingcat. His work was the core of the Oscar-nominated documentary Navalny, where you can watch Christo track down Putin's men who poisoned the Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Christo also recently was put on Russia's most wanted list. So I want to start with Fred's reporting on the Wagner Group. There's a lot there. Let's start with what we heard that soldier saying to Fred, talking about Wagner prisoners and fighters, many of whom are prisoners, fighting in mass and appearing to be on drugs.
Well, we have to be careful with statements like this because it's kind of the oldest trope in warfare that people assume that the other side is on drugs. We've heard this back in the Second World War. We've heard it actually at the beginning of the war where the Russians were accusing the brave Ukrainians of being on drugs because otherwise they can't be so brave and advance so quickly. So I don't know that that is a fact, but could it be a fact? I would say yes, because Prigozhin has an obsession with chemical weapons, with poisons. His phone number is in the call records of the lead GRU military intelligence poison doctor of the Russian army. They exchange information. There have been previous allegations that Prigozhin has poisoned journalists as well. And we know that this unit that he communicates with actually does develop advanced medications, let's call it this way, for pain relief of soldiers. And any of these could have side effects or the main effect of actually putting a soldier in a sort of a drowsy state.
Right. So when you say, you know, it, whether it's true or not, certainly there's enough data points that indicate it certainly could be.
It's quite possible, and
all of that. So when you hear Fred also talking about these waves of fighters, the soldier talks about 200 Wagnerites to about 20 Ukrainians. So we hear about those overwhelming numbers. At the same time, we're hearing that he's running out of soldiers too, Wagner, and he's having trouble recruiting, trying to find, you know, maybe even Ukrainian prisoners. How stable is Prigozhin's power right now?
Well, what we're seeing is a competitive market. We have the army competing against Prigozhin. Prigozhin could be competing against the army. That's both a political competition because Prigozhin wants to get a political role. We've discussed this on this show.
Yes.
And he's slowly progressing to actually being recognized as a political, almost a sovereign entity within Russia. One example of this is that only yesterday, the Russian Ministry of Defense finally promised that they will start providing heavy equipment to so-called volunteer units. And he's not the PMC, he's a volunteer unit. So
right.
They're recognizing him as one of them. So he's achieving that. And therefore, I could say that the Ministry of Defense is losing in this political battle.
So we're learning that two men suspected of spying for Russia were arrested by Slovenia's intelligence service. And this is according to Reuters. This is part of a larger trend, though, that you're looking into. Russian spies essentially being rounded up around the world. What are you seeing?
What we're seeing is at least 16 Russian spies living undercover, long-term sleeper agents, having been arrested and rounded up in the last 12 months alone. This is unusual. I mean, the last such large bust was 12 years ago when the FBI rounded up about 10 of them and just sent them home. But we've never seen such a consecutive sequence of so many spies. What does this mean? This means that Russia, on one hand, is kind of putting their spies into more risky operations because they need these people to go out and do more kinetic stuff. In the past, they would just let them lie low for years, but now they need them to steal data from the International Criminal Court and get embedded there, or steal data from NATO. So that's why they get caught more easily. But the second reason why we're seeing this is because Western nations are much more alert than before, and they're looking for the spies, and before they were asleep at the wheel.
Do you think this could end up, I know you possibly giving the ammo for some sort of a transfer that could result in someone like a Paul Whelan, who's gotten a lot of coverage in this country because he was not included in the Brittany Griner swap, to come home?
I do think this is a very likely outcome because Putin needs to get these people back. They're agents of the state. They're not just some spies that got money to spy. They're Russians, professional soldiers. He needs to get them back. With 16 or more of them, he needs to make a trade soon.
He needs to make, which is fascinating to watch all of this happening and very much under the radar for many. So Alexei Navalny sent out tweets today about Putin's brutal prisons. And I should note, he can only tweet really by sending a note out through his lawyer. It's hard. He's in solitary confinement. So when he tweets, it's notable. He said today in part, they will kill anyone they're asked to and report the cause of death as pneumonia. He said this as he has been sick, right, as he has been in solitary, as we have seen his physical condition when we see him deteriorate dramatically. You know him well. In the documentary film, of course, you followed the story of who poisoned him. You've been nominated for an Oscar, which is, you know, congratulations to you and your team there. But Navalny is still there. He's still there. What?
Well, I mean, he's not the only one who's there. There's at least 10 political opposition figures who are there just for opposing the war. But he's clearly the one that made Putin the angriest. And what he's describing in his series of tweets is how nothing has changed since Soviet times, because he's describing the experience of
the Gulag.
Of the Gulag, and it's literally the same. The only thing that one would hope is that Putin is not as irrational as some of the people before. In Soviet times, and that he needs to keep him alive because he would sooner or later need to make a trade, whether that's a trade like the ones we discussed, or just getting out of the war with some deal with the West.
Do you think Putin is that?
Well, that's what he hasn't shown himself to be, unfortunately. So, but people around him may be more pragmatic.
All right, Christo, thank you very much. Always appreciate speaking with you. And next, new video of former President Trump being deposed in New York and giving this answer more than 400 times.
I declined to answer the question. Same answer.
Plus, more contradictions in the case of the deadly police beating of Tyree Nichols. The initial police report presenting a very different story than what we have now seen captured on video. And the one number that could give Florida Governor Ron DeSantis a big advantage over Donald Trump, our Harry Enten has that for you. Tonight, Trump deposed, under oath and pleading the fifth, more than 400 times. 400. And it's all in a remarkable new video obtained by CNN. The deposition coming as part of the New York Attorney General's civil investigation into the Trump Organization's business practices. Bryn Gingras is out front.
I do.
In a newly released portion of a taped deposition, former President Donald Trump did this.
I declined to answer the question. I declined to answer the question. Same answer.
More than 400 times, Trump pleaded the fifth to a rapid-fire line of questioning coming from the New York Attorney General Letitia James's office, part of her civil investigation into the Trump Organization's business practices. The deposition, a rare window into how Trump acted under oath.
Anyone in my position not taking the Fifth Amendment would be a fool, an absolute fool.
And a major reversal from what he once argued in public on the campaign trail and as president.
You see, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
In the August deposition, Trump used his opening remarks to lash out at the Attorney General, who was sitting in the room with him, claiming the probe was political and repeating one of his familiar phrases.
This is the greatest witch hunt in the history of our country.
And criticizing how James campaigned for her office.
It's important that everyone understand that the days of Donald Trump are coming to an end.
Promising to bring Trump to justice.
We cannot permit a renegade and out-of-control prosecutor to use this investigation as a means of advancing her political career.
All claims James denies. The contentious sit-down took place just 2 days after the FBI searched Trump's Mar-a-Lago home for classified documents. 1 month later,
claiming you have money that you do not have does not amount to the art of the deal. It's the art of the steal.
James announced her office's $250 million civil lawsuit against Trump, three of his children, and the Trump Organization, accusing them of manipulating the value of properties to make more money. Many questions directed to the former president during the deposition focused on financials.
You reviewed this document with Alan Weisselberg and your son Don Trump Jr. before it was finalized as part of the 2019 Statement of Financial Condition. Is that correct?
Same answer.
Trump continued to plead the fifth when asked about the company's former CFO, Alan Weisselberg, who is now serving time after making a plea deal with the Manhattan District Attorney's Office in a separate case.
Mr. Weisselberg, do you have plans to return to Trump Org when you're done?
A case that found the Trump Organization guilty on 17 criminal counts, including tax fraud.
And the Trump Organization denies the allegations made by the AG's office, including those against the Trump family and company executives. This case is expected to go to trial in October. Aaron Trump and his attorneys have tried to delay that start. So far, they have been unsuccessful.
All right, Brian, of course, that timing puts you right ahead of the beginning of the primary season. Thank you. And Ryan Goodman joins me along with John Dean, both out front. So, Ryan, we know that Trump obviously has previously given his opinion of people who plead the fifth, right? That this is for something the mob does, right? You only do it if you're guilty. But just taking aside his point of view from a legal perspective, right? He went in there, chose to do this under legal counsel. What does it tell you that he chose to invoke it more than 400 times?
So I think it means he's in trouble legally, at least in the civil case. If he were in a criminal case and he pleads the fifth, it can't be used against him. But in a civil case, there's plenty of New York state law and around the country.
So they can.
Absolutely. In fact, the jury will probably see the same videotape in full each time that he tried to plead the fifth.
Because as we were joking, if we played all 400, everybody, that would have still taken several minutes. Yeah.
That's right. So they could make 400 adverse inferences in a certain sense, meaning that they can say, because he took the fifth, it is a suggestion of wrongdoing, and the American public can make the same inference themselves. In law, you can do it in a civil suit, and we could do it ourselves to think of it that way. And it's interesting that he himself said, you know, anybody in my position would be a fool, an absolute fool, for not taking the fifth. Well, his son, Don Jr., and Ivanka Trump, according to CNN's reporting, within the 2 weeks before his deposition, they were deposed. They didn't take the fifth.
Right, and he did. And as you say, it's crucial that it can be used as evidence in the civil case. So, John, let me play some more video from the Trump deposition. as Ryan's pointing out, that the federal grand jury will see. This is just after Trump stated he would be taking the Fifth throughout the deposition. So he announces this, and then this happens.
So, Mr. Trump, I take it you are not going to answer any questions about your preparation today with your counsel. Is that correct?
I mean, should I say this, or should I respond to that?
Just read that.
For all of the reasons provided in my answer, which is incorporated herein, in its entirety, I decline to answer the question.
That was the first time, and then, of course, there were about 400 after that, John. You say his decision to do this, to invoke the Fifth in this way, is unprecedented?
Absolutely. I certainly know Nixon gave a number of depositions post-presidency, and I've looked around to see if he did, and there's no indication he ever gave a Fifth Amendment invocation. He didn't do so when he was before a grand jury, still looking at Watergate after he'd left the office. And I can't find, Aaron, any president who ever has invoked the Fifth Amendment. So this is unprecedented.
Wow, which is amazing. And Ryan, it's just, as you point out, shows he could possibly be in real trouble to do that because it can be used against him. But there's the other legal issues. And I'm not even talking about the January 6th and the federal grand jury in Georgia and all of those issues. How about just basically the grand jury that was just convened in Manhattan to begin presenting evidence in a case related to Trump's role in hush payments to Stormy Daniels, the adult film star? This case seemed to be going nowhere, and now suddenly you've got the DA bringing witnesses and you've got a grand jury. What does that mean?
So it sounds like they're very serious. You don't bring a grand jury unless you're seriously considering criminal charges. And New York has a special rule for the statute of limitations that otherwise people might have thought would have run by now due to COVID. So
it got you got a buy.
And everybody did in a certain sense, all their cases. So I think that's very serious, and it does mean that the district attorney might be mounting a criminal case. Now, it has to be a pretty sophisticated case because the charge for falsifying his business records for a hush money payment would be a misdemeanor. They have to tie it to another crime, but that might be like a New York State election law crime, and that's what the focus will be on.
So all of this mounting, just as people were thinking, perhaps it was only the federal grand jury in January 6th in Georgia, all of these things as well. John, I want to ask you about what's going on with President Biden and the classified documents, though, as well, because we're now reporting that the FBI searched President Biden's think tank in November after his legal team told the National Archives that they found classified documents there. But we didn't find out about it then. And in fact, it was months before we learned the classified documents were found in that office. We may never would have found out about them being in his home if journalists hadn't reported that, right? It wasn't Biden's legal team, wasn't the White House. Nobody else put this information out. If this is just so simple and there's no there, why is it so complicated? Why is nobody putting the truth out there? Does it look like there's something to hide?
Well, that's the impression they're giving with the mishandling of the communications of what is going on. It's surprising that as sophisticated as the Biden operation is, that they don't recognize that you've got to get the truth out, get it out fast, and get it out in full, because that's the sort of impressions we get that they're hiding something. We know this was a voluntary invitation for the FBI to come in and do the search. Apparently, we don't know what they found or didn't find, but it is not good for the Biden people to have these kind of stories constantly drip, drip, drip.
All right. And they do. It's constantly drip, drip, drip. Thank you both very much, John Dean, Ryan Goodman. And next, the stark differences between the initial police report and the video of the violent and deadly beating of Tyree Nichols. Differences like police saying he grabbed a detective's gun or tried to. Plus, embattled Republican George Santos stepping aside from his committee assignments while the investigations into his lies continue. Investigations that he says don't worry him.
Why are you confident you'll be clear?
I'm confident I'll be clear because I have nothing to hide.
Why won't you answer questions about...
Tonight, the family of Tyree Nichols accusing officers of trying to cover up the brutal beating of their son that led to his death 3 days later. The initial police report, surfacing more than 3 weeks after Nichols' death, presents a very different story than the hour of footage that we have all now seen that captures what the officers actually did that night. Ryan Young is out front, and a warning, of course, that the footage in his piece is disturbing.
For the most part, it's just been a real roller coaster ride.
It's like a never-ending nightmare.
Tonight, startling revelations in the Tyree Nichols investigation. An initial police report from January 7th contains what appear to be stark contradictions to what is seen on the police body cam footage. The report itself has not been released by police, though a copy has been widely circulating online. That copy was first reported by the New York Times, and authorities have not denied its authenticity. In it is a detailed account of what officers say happened after their initial traffic stop of Nichols. The written report claims that Nichols was asked to exit his vehicle, but he was refusing lawful detention and started to fight with the detectives.
Get on the ground!
It also says Nichols was sweating profusely and irate when he got out of his car and that he grabbed for a detective's gun. And that when pepper spray was used on him, chemical agent had no effect and that Nichols continued to resist. The report calls Nichols a suspect in aggravated assault, even though the videos don't appear to show him fighting back, and lists Martin as a victim. Emmett Martin III is one of the five former officers charged with second-degree murder in connection to Nichols' death. Notably, the report does not mention the officers punching and kicking Nichols, but it does note one officer used his baton on Nichols to get him to comply. Some of what the officers claim happened is captured on audio from the footage after the beating occurs.
He was going for my gun too, so I'm like,
he grabbed my gun.
Look, we got him out of the car. He's like, "Hey, bro, you good?" Swung, bow, almost hit me.
A spokesperson for the Shelby County District Attorney tells CNN she cannot verify that this is the original report, but that, quote, the DA does have a report of the same account of events. The DA, who's prosecuting the five former Memphis officers, says there is nothing preventing his department from bringing more charges.
We are, in fact, looking at everybody. We're looking at the officer that was at the first scene that did not go to the second scene. We're looking at fire department personnel who arrived afterwards. We're looking even at people who were doing the paperwork later on. We're looking at everything. Nothing is being ruled out.
Nichols' family attorney, Ben Crump, says the report lends weight to what Tyree's mother believes happened.
She says she believed that she thought it was a conspiracy to cover it up from the beginning.
Nichols' brother says he hasn't watched the body camera footage and doesn't need to.
Police brutality is nothing new. And I already knew, as soon as I seen them photos from him in the hospital, I already knew that they treated my brother like an animal. They beat on him like he was nothing. I don't have to watch the video to know that.
Yeah, Aaron, tough video to watch. I talked to two Memphis police officers off camera today, and they were telling me this has been hard for the entire department, but they were happy with the way leadership has moved forward with firing these officers. I was also told when they filed an incident report, they should have put in that report what they did every time they escalated the situation. When they started using their hands, when they started using the taser, when they started using that baton. And these are things that we hope to see when they finally release that report, that we can go through and see what that initial incident report said hours after this beating happened. Aaron?
All right, Ryan, thank you very much. And I want to bring in now Darren Porcher, former NYPD lieutenant. Darren, of course, we watched the video together, all these videos together here on Friday night. So you hear Ryan laying out how the body camera video, the video that we have, contradicts a lot of what is in the initial police report, what the officers said happened. How often do you see discrepancies like this in a police report?
Unfortunately, this is a regular occurrence when you have officers that commit to misconduct. I was a lieutenant in the NYPD's Internal Affairs Bureau, so on many occasions I've had officers that have created a fictitious report based on the accounts that actually occurred. But what's more so amazing is the officers were impervious to what was actually going on while they knew that body cameras as well as the poll camera was recording this encounter. It calls into question, is this something that the officers did on a regular basis? And this is this just something that came to fruition based on the...
They would have known that poll camera was there.
They should have known. Absolutely. This is where these officers patrolled. In addition to that, remember, the officers were equipped with body cameras. So if anyone would have known this was recorded, it should have been them.
Absolutely. All right. So in the footage, again, the disturbing footage, you do not see Tyree Nichols fighting with the officers when he's first pulled out of the car, right? So this whole, he tried to grab someone's gun, we don't see it. Now, obviously, we don't see when this initially began, but we see when he comes out of the car for the first time, and we don't see anybody grab for the gun. He doesn't appear irate. He appears to be sort of saying, what are you doing? This is too much. So why do you think they made those statements?
In my professional opinion, I don't believe that he resisted arrest. However, I think that the officers did what they felt was appropriate to cover up an overwhelming degree of egregious misconduct. And it begs the question as to where was the oversight in that department if these officers felt as if they can act with impunity of this magnitude?
To this point about that camera, the Sky camera, right, that showed the actual beating, you're saying they should have known it was there. One thing is, we were watching it, we all noticed, right, there's a moment where it's up high and then it pushes in. And it appears that somebody did that, which means somebody was monitoring it and saw this.
Well, it's questionable as to if someone was actually monitoring the camera. But if someone was monitoring that camera, I think that's another issue, because I think that should have been a harbinger to send supervision to that particular area to make an assessment and take the appropriate action. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. But another point, Erin, is filing a false police report is a criminal offense. And that's what these officers did in this particular case.
Right. So you have that on top of the, of course, facing charges for second-degree murder. All right, Darren, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And out front next, wealthy Americans flocking to Florida. That could be the key to Governor Ron DeSantis' potential run to the White House. We'll tell you why. Plus, he was one of Trump's closest allies during his time in the White House. But tonight, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is speaking out to CNN about what he calls Trump's big mistake. New tonight, embattled Republican Congressman George Santos stepping down from his committees for now as he faces multiple investigations, probes he insists he is not worried about.
Why are you confident you'll be clear?
I'm confident I'll be clear, because I have nothing to hide.
Why won't you answer?
Santos stepping down from his committees the same day a brand new poll showed that nearly 80% of his constituents want him to resign, including 71% of Republicans, fed up with his long list of lies like these.
My grandparents survived the Holocaust.
I'm a Latino Jew.
My mom was a 9/11 survivor.
When I was in Baruch, we were the number one volleyball.
Did you graduate?
But I put myself through college and got an MBA from NYU.
Jessica Dean is out front.
Step away from the committees, or
nobody tells me to do anything. I made a decision on my own that I thought best represented the interests of the president.
Embattled Congressman George Santos facing multiple investigations into his lies and campaign finances, taking a step back today.
Good morning.
Telling his fellow Republicans behind closed doors that he wants off of his two committees until his issues are resolved. Santos saying in a statement his decision was based on, quote, the ongoing attention surrounding both my personal and campaign financial investigations.
I met with George Santos yesterday, and I think it was an appropriate decision that until he can clear everything up, he's off of committees right now.
His decision coming as he faces calls to resign over his lies and as federal investigators probe his finances. Santos remaining defiant.
You'd have to define exaggerations.
In a softball interview with One America News that aired today, saying he's already said he's sorry.
I am sorry. I'm deeply sorry. I've fielded calls. I've been calling supporters to apologize directly to them for that. And, you know, I don't know what is asked of me right now. When you ask, oh, you have not shown remorse or you don't seem to look sorry, I don't know what looking sorry looks like.
And offering up a single regret.
I wouldn't have lied about the education. I wouldn't have. I would have just fought like hell to get that nomination.
But there are still more questions being raised about the accuracy of his campaign's filings with federal regulators. The latest example from his first bid for Congress in 2020, when he listed someone named Steven Berger as having contributed $2,500. But the California address given for Berger belongs to William Brandt, a prominent California cattle rancher. He told CNN no one with that name has ever lived there. Quote, I built the house, been there 40-something years, Brandt said, adding he wouldn't give Santos a dime.
Mr. Santos, do you plan to give any money back to donors who said you defrauded them?
The development only adding to mounting questions about Santos's finances.
What is the source of that money?
Santos today vowing this.
And I've learned my lesson, and I can guarantee you that from now on, anything and everything is always going to be above board. It's largely always been above board. I'm just going to go the extra step now to double check, cross-reference everything.
A source familiar with the meeting between Speaker McCarthy and George Santos says that McCarthy did ask him, Aaron, when he would be addressing all of these controversies. Of course, that's something we've been asking him for the better part of a month now. He continues to say at the right time, at another time. And it's unclear if this OAN interview, which you just saw bits and pieces of and which really didn't press him much on anything, is his explanation or if we're going to get any further explanation down the road somewhere.
All right. Aaron. Thank you very much, Jessica, with that reporting. Also new tonight, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis firing back at Donald Trump after the former president called him disloyal for considering a 2024 bid and said this about his handling of COVID.
There are Republican governors that did not close their states. Florida was actually closed for a very long period of time. They're trying to rewrite history.
Safe to say that is not how the country perceives Florida during COVID. And without mentioning Trump by name, here's what DeSantis said today in response to Trump.
Not only did we win re-election, we won with the highest percentage of the vote that any Republican governor candidate has in the history of the state of Florida. We won by the largest raw vote margin, over 1.5 million votes, than any governor candidate has ever had in Florida history. And so what I would just say is that verdict has been rendered by the people of the state of Florida.
Harry Enten is out front. And Harry, it's interesting. You know, DeSantis does this like a direct slam back at Trump and he doesn't use his name. That's become sort of his MO on this. But, you know, he's laying out the numbers, how he did in his reelection in Florida. But you're saying that, you know, he's talking about Florida and Florida voters. There's a national case, too.
There's absolutely a national case. Look, I think we become used to politicians not being like nationally. Right. And if we look at the net favorability rating, that's favorable minus unfavorable among voters nationally. What do you see? You see, DeSantis is at 0 points. That is as favorable as equal as unfavorable. You might not say that's great, but compare that to the other politicians, Joe Biden.
U.S. politics.
Right. And U.S. politics, Joe Biden's 12 points underwater. Donald Trump is 24 points underwater. The fact is, Ron DeSantis, I think you can make the argument, is the most popular politician nationally who's still in the game at this point, Eric.
Which is pretty incredible to say. And when it comes to his state, people voting with their feet, people all around the country are going to Florida, especially wealthy ones, right, for the tax reasons. The National Association of Realtors today said Florida was the fastest growing state in the entire country right now, top state for people moving from other states.
Yes.
318,000 people moved there last year. People are leaving New York, California, and Illinois. What does this trend mean for DeSantis?
Well, I mean, if you look at the numbers, you know that wealthy Americans in particular are moving to Florida, four times, I think, more than any other state at this particular point. And what we know is that wealthy Republicans are going to form the base for Ron DeSantis in his bid against Donald Trump for the presidency. If we look at the net favorability ratings right now among Republican voters who make $100,000 or more of their household income, look at Ron DeSantis.
Wow.
69 points above water. Trump, even, that is, as many Republicans like as dislike DeSantis among those making at least $100,000. Now, of course, those wealthy Americans, those wealthy Republicans, in my mind, are going to sort of fuel DeSantis's bid. Why? They make up 30% of the Republican base. You might say that's not a majority, but that's still a large portion. And there are going to be a lot of Republicans who are going to fund his bid.
And by the way, when you say 30%, it's sort of, you know, I guess just a little bit shy of that. People identify as Trump's base, right? Yeah. So all of a sudden you see the divisions there. DeSantis, though, he's got his economic case to make, and he does make it.
Yeah.
But he does his culture case a lot, right? When he talks about culture wars, that's his favorite go-to. Does that work with those voters?
This is all about Fox News. This is about the Fox News audience. You know DeSantis is beginning on Fox News a ton. And if you look at his favorable rating among Fox News viewers, look at this, 82%. 82%, just 5% hold an unfavorable view. This is working for Ron DeSantis, at least at this point, Eric.
Oh, it is. But if he wants to bring in new people, you got to go somewhere you're below 82%.
I would think so. Maybe come on CNN.
Maybe, yes. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And next, a CNN exclusive. Hear what Trump's former ally, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, has to say about the former president hosting anti-Semites like Kanye West. Plus, Boeing bidding farewell tonight to the iconic 747. Tonight, a big mistake. In an exclusive interview with CNN's Jake Tapper, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is criticizing former President Trump's decision to host anti-Semites Kanye West and Nick Fuentes at his Mar-a-Lago resort this past November. West has publicly praised Hitler. Fuentes is a Holocaust denier. Netanyahu, though, even after all of that, would still not say if Trump should drop his 2024 presidential bid. Here's part of Jake's exclusive conversation with the prime minister.
Trump has already launched a 2024 presidential bid. You have said effusive things about what he did for Israel while he was president. But you've also criticized him for the insurrection that he incited, which you called, quote, a disgraceful act that must be vigorously condemned, and his recent rather shocking willingness to sit down and break bread with Holocaust deniers and virulent anti-Semites, Nick Fuentes and Kanye West. Do you have any concerns if Donald Trump's back in the White House? Do you think it's time for the Republican Party to look to a new generation of leadership?
First of all, I did praise President Trump because he did great things for Israel. He recognized Jerusalem as our capital, kind of late because, you know, 3,000 years ago, King David proclaimed it as such. He moved the American embassy there. He recognized our sovereignty in the Golan Heights. He went out of the what I think is the dangerous nuclear deal with Iran. He helped me forge the four historic peace accords with the Arab states. So he's done great things. I think he made a big mistake on the this Kanye West thing, and I said so. I'm not going to intervene in your politics. You know that. You tried. It's good that you try to get me involved in your politics, but you do your job and I'll do my job. I want to stay away from your politics. Let the people decide.
And you can watch much more of Jake's interview with Prime Minister Netanyahu in a CNN special report tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. Out front next, long live the queen of the skies. Boeing delivering its final 747, a plane that changed the way we travel the world. It was an experience for any of us who flew it. And finally tonight, the Queen of the Skies takes a final bow. Today, Boeing delivered its final 747, a plane that has been in production for more than 50 years and changed the way that we all viewed flying, really. The last plane going to cargo carrier Atlas Air. Now, millions of people have flown on the 747. Six presidents. There's even a space shuttle across the country. You know, would take it as the shuttle would come in for landing. I remember the first time I flew on a 747. It was Japan Airlines. The plane was actually configured for coach seats on the second level. So I was up there. It was an amazing feeling. No one sat next to me. I got to spread out a bit. Nothing actually felt so special until I flew the A380. As of today, there are only about 44 747s that carry passengers still in service. And of course, they're still the one for the President of the United States. Thanks so much for joining us. AC360 begins now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.